who's going to tell us that matter matters.
Okay, can everybody hear me well?
Yes, go ahead.
Hello, Marseille here.
Okay, so thank you, everybody. Thank you, the organizers, for inviting me to give this seminar. I will talk to you today about this recent paper by me and my two collaborators, Roberto Vercacci and Astrid Acorn. So today I will tell you why we think that matter matters in asymptotically safe quantum reality. We can move to slide number two. So this is a brief outline of my talk. So first I will very, just in one slide, I will talk to you about the modulation that we that move us to do this work. Then, since I assume that science is not very familiar with asymptotic safety, I will do a brief introduction to the asymptotic safety framework. Then I will present the main results of our work. And I will conclude with some remarks and summary of all the results we obtained. So we can move to slide number three. So I think that a quantum theory of gravity, that is a viable description of the microscopic dynamics of our universe, must include that dynamical matter degrees of freedom. In the quantum gravity approaches that are on the market, usually matter is ignored or is included in a non-dynamical way, or say the treatment of matter is not sufficient. This is an important feature that we want to include in quantum gravity theory, because we know that the addition of matter degrees of freedom could alter the properties of a theory. For example, we can look at the Young-Mean theory, where we all know that the ultraviolet completion of the Young-Mean theory is provided by asymptotic freedom. But adding too many fermion degrees of freedom to the Young-Mean theory just spoils or destroys completely the asymptotic freedom property. And we think that similar effects could also occur in gravity. And in particular, in our framework, so in the asymptotic safety scenario, this is the case, as I will show you in the following talk. In particular, in the asymptotic safety framework, it's quite straightforward to include the matter degrees of freedom. Since the asymptotic safety machinery is based on quantum field theory formulation of gravity, it's quite easy just to take the usual quantum field theory and well-known quantum field theory for matter degrees of freedom. In particular, there are also works that show that the quantum gravity fluctuation can generate interactions between matter. And we can also use this the asymptotic safety framework to study the compatibility of gravity with various particle physics models. In particular, this is a thing I will discuss later, but we can ask for the existence of ultraviolet fixed point for the gravitational sector. So we take the system fixed point as a requirement, and we can ask if the particle physics model coupled to gravity still preserves the fixed point, so it is compatible with the requirement of an asymptotic safety gravity. And also, we can take it as a test for the asymptotic safety quantum gravity, because let's say that the matter content of the Southern model is not compatible with an asymptotic safety quantum gravity. This would, let's say, not default in favor of the asymptotic safety framework, because it's even at the lowest possible approximation, we are not able to couple the matter fields we observe, and we all things that are present in our universe, so the standard model one, for sure, trying to resolve all the approximation we will use will not help in this direction. So if we move to slide number 4, I will here start the introduction to asymptotic safety. So we all know that perturbative quantum gravity is not renormalizable, in particular at one loop level when coupled with matter. This is a well-known result of Topf and Delphine of 74. And at two loop level with just good gravity, this is the Gorov-Sanyasi well-known work of 1986. But Weinberg in 76 proposed, well, maybe we can try to save perturbative quantum gravity by letting exist a non-trivial fixed point for the normalization group flow of gravity. And in this way, we can try to define in another way the renormalizability of the theory. So if we move to slide number 5, I will explain you what I mean for fixed points. So after an action is chosen to describe our particular theory, that can be gravity, but it can also be some other quantum field theory, because all this procedure applies for a general quantum field theory. So after an action is chosen with the desired field content and symmetry, we can relate physics at different scales with the normalization group flow. In particular, if the action is parametrized by a set of couplings, so you just choose the action with a sum of operators, and each operator is weighted by a coupling. The normalization group flow is equivalent to compute all the beta function of the coupling. In particular, so a fixed point in the normalization group flow is a point in the theory space, so in the space of all the couplings, where all these couplings just stop running, so all the beta function vanishes. We can extend the usual definition of the fixed point of beta functions, more general, to dimension-full couplings. In particular, this definition is extended in a very natural way. You just define the dimensionless coupling with a right power of the scale we are considering. So these 6 points have some properties. In particular, we require that along the RG flow, all the quantities are well defined, there are no divergences. And another very important requirement is that the ultraviolet critical surface has to be finite dimensional. So this means that the surface that is attracted to the non-Gaussian fixed point, to the non-trivial fixed point, has to be finite dimensional. This is a requirement. So this is something we have to check a posteriori when we do all the analysis of our theory. So in principle, it's not something we can... So it's something we are assuming. Okay. So if the critical surface is finite dimensional, this means that our theory is still predictive. So just a finite number of measurements is required to record the theory at all scales. Then in the case of gravity, we also have the requirement that we know the infrared limit we want for our theory is GR. So for the RG flow, we require that the RG trajectories that flow into the fixed point have an interval where GR is a good approximation. So we can move to slide number 6. So I explained what I mean for fixed point, and this was the basic idea of Weinberg. Until the 90s, not many detailed computations were done because the calculability of the theory was quite poor. Thanks to the work of Reiter and Dasterich in 94, they proposed to compute the RG flow, the effective average action techniques. So if you move to slide number 7, I will just tell you very, very briefly what is the functional normalization group technique or approach. So the main ingredient is the effective average action, what I will call gamma k. This is basically the effective action we all know from the quantum field theory, but modified. In particular, it's modified by the addition of a regulator or cutoff, which I will call RK, that you add to the Weyl action, and then you derive, using the standard procedure, the effective action. And what you get in the end, you will call it effective average action after you subtracted back the regulator. This regulator just implements some sort of coarse grain or cutoff. It acts as a suppression factor for the low moment of fluctuation. So it works like an infrared cutoff. The power of this of the functional normalization group approach is that the effective average action satisfies this equation that is called the Weyl-Kirch equation. So here in this equation, you can see the super trace is a trace on all the degrees of freedom. By that, dp, I mean the derivative with respect to the scale. Okay, so I will call K is the scale, dt is K times the derivative with respect to K. RK is the cutoff term I introduced earlier, and gamma 2 is for that part of the action. So this equation is general and is exacted, but usually you cannot just solve it directly. You have to use some approximation. One of the approximations is just to truncate the effective action to some combination of operators, and then you just project everything on this combination of operators. So you just discard everything else. So if we move to slide number 8, we basically conclude my introduction to synthetic safety by saying that there are more than 2 decades of work on trying to find evidences on the existence of elongation fixed points within different truncations of the effective rejection. In particular, we are still missing a complete proof of the existence of these non-Gaussian fixed points in general. But within different truncations, we found these fixed points and we studied it. So if you move to slide number 9, I will just briefly recap what kind of truncation are studied, has been studied. So there are a lot of work on the Einstein-Hilbert truncation. This is just a combination of the times proportional to the curvature and the constant, so the cosmological constant in particular. Then there are works on the R-squared, C-squared truncation, so where you include also times that are proportional to the square of the Weyl tensor. Then more recently, there are works on the F of R truncation. So you just keep terms proportional to the nth power of the curvature. There are works that goes with that goes to the power n equal to 34. So this truncation is studied up to a very large number, a very large power of the curvature. There are also works that studied a first-order formulation with a nose term and also running the parameter. There are works using Lorentzian signatures, works that also include markers, and works that try to resolve the approximation between background and fluctuation, since all these kind of computation are done in the background field Newton. There is the separation between background and fluctuation. And also there are, finally, there are works that treat the running of the Gauss action. So we can move to the next slide, where I will start talking about my work. So in this slide, you can see what are the choices for our truncation. In particular, we will use an Einstein-Hilbert truncation for the gravitational factor with the usual gauge fixing. By usual, I mean the one-parameter gauge fixing, where we fix the gauge to be the lambda one. And the Fadat Popov Gauss action. For the massless, we will consider massless minimally coupled matrices. The scale I have nothing to say. For the thermions, we will use a tetral formulation for the gravitational part. So everybody knows that when we couple fermions to gravity, we have to use a tetral formulation. But by using a symmetric gauge fixing of the tetral fluctuation, we can re-express everything in terms of the metric fluctuation. Then we will also not consider the O4 gas. So I forgot to say here all the works in the Euclidean signature, so this is why we have O4 and not O13. So we will completely ignore the O4 gas. That with this gauge fixing are not dynamical. So they don't have a kinetic term. For the gauge field, we will consider abelian field. Here since AEDC, okay, this is the typo. And we will also not consider any mixing between gauge and diplomacy gas. In a recent work of my collaborators, Percacci and then Codello, Pagani, and De Dorito, it has been shown that in order to have a consistent closure of the beta function in the pure gravity case, also the graviton and the gravitational gas, the anomalous dimension are needed. So in this case, we will also compute the matter anomalous dimension, and we will use them to close the beta function. So you can move to slide number 11, when I will go a little bit into the details of the computation, but not so much, so we'll avoid to put any very long and boring formula. So as I said before, all the function, we will use the functional normalization technique. So we will use a background two method to compute the effective action. So when we use the background two method, the gauge invariant of the effective action is assured by imposing, by keeping the gauge invariant of the background. This splitting between background and fluctuation lets us to distinct in a meaningful way high and low momenta of the quantum fluctuation that let us to give this cutoff I told you before. This is the core of the asymptotic safety approach. And then we will keep the background dependent by letting the background to be general. Then we specify the background to do actual computation, but the result will be background independent. So the main novelty of our computation is that we computed explicitly all the anomalous dimensions. This is something that was not done before because it's quite complex and it requires a lot of computation that were not very straightforward. So we extracted the wave functional normalization, the Z phi, what I call here Z phi, from which we can define the anomalous dimension in the usual way, from the two-point functional. And to do this computation, we will use the flat background. Then we will combine the result with the the one you can find in the literature for the usual beta function of the cosmological, the cosmological constant and Newton's constant. The tilde means that we are considering the a-dimensional quantity. As I said before, we need to use a-dimensional quantities here to give a meaningful definition of the IG flow and fixed point. So these computations are done with a spherical background because we need to extract a term that is proportional to the curvature. And we will keep into account all the anomalous dimensions we computed. So we can move to slide number 12. So
Hello? Could you go back a little bit to slide 11? Can you hear me?
Yeah, very, very low. So.
Okay. So when you say that there is background independence,
yes.
So could I choose a background where geometry is actually varying at the Planck scale?
In principle, yes, you can use whatever background you want, but then I don't know if you are still able to do all the computations.
Right. So in actual computations, some additional assumption must be made. I mean, for example, you have chosen flat background, etc. So
yes.
What do you need? I mean, somehow in the actual calculation, what?
So in principle, the procedure is background independent, right? So if I compute some quantity that I know that is background independent, then I can specify a background to compute it. And I should know that quantity is independent from background from some starting assumptions. So the method assured me that the quantity I computed is background independent, and then I have to specify it to do the actual computation.
Right. But in this proof that the quantities are background independent, the argument is formal, isn't it? Or is it really taken into account all the details?
No, it's formal. It's formal.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead. Thank you very much.
So we are on slide number 12. So before I start to show you all the detailed results we get from our computation, I think that it's useful to look at the one-loop analysis of our beta function. So here, for one-loop analysis, I intend something very specific that is not maybe what you're used to from the QFT literature. So for one loop, I mean that we neglect at this point, the anomalous dimension of all the fields, and then that we expand the beta function to the first order in the cosmological constant and to the second order in the Newton's constant. So the two expressions we get are the two in this line, where NS, I recall you, is the number of scalars, MV is the number of Dirac fermions, and MGU the number of vector fields, the gauge fields. And in red here, I try to show you where the effect of graviton and gravity is. So it's encoded in that number. I think that it's useful to look at these very simple formulas, because in this approximation, the problem can be studied analytically. And so we will try to analyze the effect of matter in this approximation. So you can move to slide number 13. If you look for fixed points to the while loop data function, we get these two fixed points for the two couplings, the dimensionless cosmological constant and the dimensionless Newton constant. So how we can say if the fixed point is a good one or a bad one? For example, one requirement we can ask is the positivity of the Newton's constant as a fixed point, the G star. This is a requirement that, in principle, one can object, because you can say, okay, the cosmological constant, the Newton's constant, you will be fixing it in the infrared, and then you can flow whatever he wants. But actually, we know that the Newton's constant is positive in the infrared, because the one we experience from GR. And no truncations are known that change the sign of the Newton's constant during the flow. So we thought that requiring it to be positive also in the ultraviolet would be a good requirement. So requiring G star to be positive is the same to require that this combination of the number of fields is negative. In particular, you can see that the fixed point has divergences. So we have two in the parameter space, which is three-dimensional. We have two parallel planes of divergences that are defined by the denominators equal to zero of the two couplings at the fixed point. So we will cut the part of the parameter space we are interested. Obviously, number of fields are all positive. So we have only 1/8 of the whole R3 parameter space. So this corner is, of the parameter space is cut by two parallel planes. We will consider just the region of fixed points that is connected with the one of no matter, so the pure gravity fixed point that we believe is the one that is realized. In particular, we have the critical exponents of these fixed points are both positive in the allowed region, so in this region connected with the pure gravity fixed point. So if you move to slide number 14, you can see a plot of this allowed region. So dark blue you can see the allowed region is no vector field. And then the one a little bit bigger is the one with 6, then 12, and then 24 gauge field. Here we just pick some number to have an idea of what's going on. So adding gauge field, we just enlarge your region in the number of scalar, number of Dirac fields of the parameter space. And then I forgot to say something a little bit more important. If you go back to slide number 13, I'm sorry, you can see how the number of scalars and the number of DSPs are bounded. So adding an arbitrary amount of scalar fields or DSPs transform to false inequality, but adding an arbitrary number of vector fields is compatible with the inequality. So this is why on the plot of slide number 14 we see a plotting the number of scalar number of DSPs. Because then adding, you can add an arbitrary number of gauge fields and still retain fixed points, but just changing the shape of the distribution. So if we move to slide number 15, now we'll just show you the results for the full system, so not just in the one-loop approximation. Also in the full system, we need some selection criteria for the fixed points, because in general, when you look for fixed points, you will have some solution of the beta function equal to zero system that are not physical fixed points, but are just artifacts of the transitions or that we are using. So we need some criteria to identify the good fixed points from the bad fixed points. So in particular, our selection criteria is just the one. So we will pick, every time we will pick just the fixed point that is a continuous deformation of the pure gravity fixed point. And to do that is in some way equivalent by of requiring the Newton's constant of the fixed point to be positive for the same reason as I told you in the one loop analysis. Then we will also discard all the fixed points with less than two relevant directions. And we rule out all the fixed points with two large critical exponents. We will choose this value to be 20, but this is just an artifact number. So changing this number will just change very, very slightly the boundary of the allowed region that is still a little bit delicate because of all the approximation we use. So to these selection criteria, we will also add another criteria that is something new we are proposing. So we want to exploit the connection between the predictivity of the theory and the anomalous dimension of the field, in particular of the graviton in our case, to say if a fixed point is good or bad. In particular, for an operator that is as I show here in the slide, composed by a coupling constant and some power of some field phi, the critical exponent and the fixed point is proportional to this combination of b, that is the dimensionality of the space-time. Here, all the analysis can be done in an arbitrary dimensional, the dimension for the space-time, but all the results I will show you are just for the case where d is equal to 4. Then you have a term that is proportional to the canonical dimensionality of the film, d phi, and a term that is proportional to the anomalous dimension of the field, theta phi. So by requiring that only a finite number of these operators are shifted to relevance at the fixed point, is equivalent to just ask that the anomalous dimension of the field phi is greater than minus 2 times the canonical dimensionality of the field. In the case of a graviton, this is equivalent to ask that eta h is greater than minus 1 in the minus 3 in the case of 4 dimensions. So I will stress that this is an additional requirement. This is not something that was ever done before. And I will show the results with and particular attention to the distinction between these, the standard selection criteria and this new criteria we are adding. So if you move to slide number 16, I will just recap here what are the effects of adding master fields to the fixed part. So in particular, adding scalar fields move the fixed point move to smaller value of the Newton's constant and larger positive value of the cosmological constant. And it is still true, as in the one-loop case, that there is a critical number of scalar fields that you can couple to gravity and still keep the existence of the gravitational fixed point. And also, it's interesting to note that adding too many scalar fields can lead to a strong increase of the critical exponent at the fixed point. Adding fermion fields will shift the cosmological constant at the fixed point to larger negative values, so it has an offset effect of the scalar. And it will move the Newton's constant at the fixed point to larger values. And also for the fermions, as in the one-loop case, it's still true that there is a critical number of fermion fields. But for the fermions, the effect on the critical exponent is small. For the vector fields, adding vector fields that has the effect to move the Newton's constant at the fixed point to smaller values and the cosmological constant to larger positive values. And also here, as in the one-loop case, there are no maximal number of vector fields, but predictivity might not be preserved. And with this statement, I mean that the anomalous dimension of the graviton grows becomes more negative adding vector fields, so you just do not satisfy anymore the additional constraints we proposed in terms of the anomalous dimension of the graviton. So if you go to slide number 17, I will show you the allowed region in the number of scalars, number of fermion parameter space with zero gauge field. So we fix the number of vector fields to zero. The red dots are the points that are compatible with the existence of the gravitational fixed point. The analysis is done in the numerical analysis. So the results are discrete. It's not an analytical result, it's a numerical result. The blue circles are the fixed points that are compatible also with the additional constraint we want to impose to the anomalous dimension of the graviton. And the black line is the result for the one-loop case. So as you can see, the region is grown a lot, more than double in the volume. But the qualitative behavior is basically the same. So you still have a maximum number of scalars and fermions you can couple to gravity and still retain the existence of the fixed point. So if you move to slide number 18, you will see the same picture, but in this case with twice the H field. So the shape of the boundary changed a little bit. We experienced that this change of the shape of the boundary is visible only in the case you move from zero to just one gauge field, and then adding gauge fields has the same effect as in the one-loop case. So the region grows, but the shape of the boundary, the shape of the boundaries are all similar. Then I have to say another important thing. As I was trying to say you before, maybe I was not very clear. You don't have to believe too much with the results at the boundaries of this region, because they are subject to a lot of approximations and to a lot of numerical uncertainties. So just not take too seriously the point at the boundary. Also, what happens at the boundaries of the region? It happens basically the same thing was happening at the one-loop case. So all the quantities that diverge, this also puts another constraint on how much we can deliver as this data at the boundary.
Can I ask
a
question? Pietro, can you hear me?
Yes.
This is Eugenio. Can you indicate in this diagram where is the standard model, and can you explain again what are the circles and the red dots? Why is there the second circle?
Okay, so the standard model is in the upper left part of this diagram. So this is actually why we choose to show. I choose to show you the plot with 12 gauge fields, because 12 gauge fields is actually the number of gauge fields for the standard model. So the standard model has 24 approximately Dirac fields. They are 45 half Dirac fields. And has 4 scalar fields. So you can just look at the upper left part of the diagram. The dots are the points that are compatible with the system of a gravitational fixed point, just by requiring it to be a continuous transformation to the other fixed point without matter. And the blue circles are the fixed points that a bound on the anomalous dimension of the graviton. That we believe can be an additional constraint to keep the predictivity of the theory. But if we move to slide number 19, we will show specific analysis of matter models. So before going into the details of the numbers, I want to give you a disclaimer. So all these results are within a particular truncation for master's field, and gravitational parts. We are neglecting all the master's part interactions. So for example, for the standard model, we are not putting into the computation all the standard model Lagrangian. We are only putting the standard model master content. And all the gauge fields are abelian. So for example, there are not the SU3 gauge fields in the standard model case. They're all U1. So you can just look at the table and see how the standard models and all these extensions that are physically motivated. So just the standard model plus dark matter scalars plus all the neutrinos, the action are still compatible with the existence of a fixed point, of a gravitational fixed point. But you have to pay attention that maybe the truncation we are using is not enough to capture all the degrees of freedom we want, because the anomalous dimension for the graviton becomes very, very negative. Then I will finish this slide, and then I will add an extra remark on this, because there has been a lot of improvement in the last month. So, I want to add that the maximally symmetric standard model extension, the other SU5 GATT or SOFN GATT, are not compatible with the existence of a gravitational fixed point. So what I want to add to this slide is that the computation were done using two different schemes for the gravitational sector and the matter sector, because the gravitational sector was done by some of my collaborators in work that has appeared in the archive in April by Codello, Ludovico, and Pagani. But and we in a work by me and Roberto Beccacci of last year, we showed that in the case of master fields, in particular in the case of fermions, you cannot use that kind of scheme. That is just wrong. And we have to use another one that is called type 2 cutoff, just for reference. So we use the correct one for the matter, but we use the results of these other guys for the gravitational part that use a different scheme. Now we are almost ready to publish, to put on the archive an updated version of the paper where I just redone all the computation in the same scheme. And the anomalous dimension of the graviton does not behave anymore so badly. So all these numbers just became more reasonable. So they're not anymore a problem. So if you move to slide number 20.
Still on this table. Hello? Can you comment on the fact that the fixed point for the cosmological constant is always negative no matter what?
Yeah, this is because all these standard model and extensions, you have a lot of fermions respect to the number of killers. And as I showed you before, the adding fermions just has this effect on the cosmological concept of fixed point.
Would you take it as evidence against these extensions? Or the effect might be compensating, say, by taking into account the dynamics?
No.
This the interactions, just, I mean, that you are neglecting.
No, I don't really think so. This is if you believe that the cosmological constant at the fixed point should be positive, but I don't think it's a requirement that is motivated physically, say. So at the fixed point, the cosmological constant can be whatever it wants, right? It's doing the infrared with the three other measurements or estimates.
Right, thank you.
But then, I mean, you can look at the flow equation, and then do you
yes.
see that, in fact, it flows to positive values at lower energies?
Yes, yes, yes.
I think that
yes,
is the
you can follow the RG trajectories in all its parts, and you can see that all these trajectories pass by the Gaussian fixed points that have all the properties you want. Okay.
Right, so they pass close to the Gaussian fixed point, but with positive cosmological constant as opposed to negative.
Yes, positive cosmological constant.
Thank you.
Okay, so if we move to slide number 20, we will see how extra dimensions are not actually required in a synthetic safety. In fact, all the results I told you are for V equals 4, so for space-time dimensions. But a priori, they are compatible. So what happens to the allowed region that I showed you in the two plots before in the case of five or six space-time dimensions? Actually, this region just shrinks a lot. In particular, here you have the picture for five space-time dimensions and to have gauge field. And you can see that this region is very, very small than the previous one. And the standard model, degrees of freedom, master degrees of freedom, are incompatible with the existence of a gravitational fixed point in five, six, or more dimensions. So this can be interpreted as against the presence of extra dimension if we believe that the standard model is the good model for the matter degrees of freedom of our universe. So we can move to slide number 21, which is the last result I want to show you. So in QMTD, quantum fluctuations just lead to a dynamical generation of the scale, lambda PCB, at which we can believe that the synthetic freedom will happen. In particular, something similar also happens for quantum gravity. So a quantum gravity scale will emerge dynamically. This scale is a transition scale between the infrared and the fixed point regime. It's a scale where the dimension full Newton coupling pass from constant, that is in the infrared, to a scale-free regime that is proportional to 1 over the scale squared. And it was found in previous work by Martin Reuters and collaborators in 2004 that this scale, in the case of Einstein-Hilbert truncation, is somewhere near the Planck scale. So a meaningful question is, okay, then what happens if we have mapped to the Einstein Bessel condition? Is this scale pushed in the infrared or in the ultraviolet? So this can be interpreted as so if you want to explore the quantum gravity scale, you have to do an experiment. To do an experiment, you will maybe use some experiment that works at some scale. But if the quantum gravity scale by the presence of matter is pushed more in the ultraviolet, maybe the hope to explore that region is less so if the scale just shifts in the ultraviolet, there is a problem because we need more energy to reach the quantum gravity scale. In particular, what we saw is that matter fluctuations does change the scale, and white scalars seem to have very little effect to this scale. Fermions shift it towards larger values, and in the case of the standard model, since we have a lot of fermions, we saw that this scale is shifted by a factor 10 towards the ultraviolet. So in principle, this is a fact against a possible experiment at the quantum gravity scale in the near future. So if you move to slide number 22, I will just conclude my talk with a brief recap of all the results. So we explored the compatibility of matter degrees of freedom within the asymptotic safety scenario for gravity. In particular, we saw the effects of scalars, fermions, and abelian gauge fields on the existence of the interactive fixed point. We saw that there is an upper limit on the allowed number of scalar fermions and vector degrees of freedom. We also proposed new criterion on the analysis of this fixed point that gives the normal dimension and the predictivity of the theory. And we also computed explicitly and included all the anomalous dimension for the quantum fluctuation. If you move to slide number 23, we then also focused on particular models, and we tried to use these particular models, the existence of a gravitational fixed point, to say something about these particular matter models. In particular, the standard model seems to be compatible with the existence of an Gaussian fixed point. Also, its observation-motivated expansion are compatible, but other models like the supersymmetric ones are not. Then also we explored the possibility of having more than four space-time dimensions, and what we saw is that the allowed region shrinks considerably, and there is no more compatibility with the standard model. In the end, we also analyzed the effect of matter degrees of freedom on the quantum gravity scale, and we saw that this quantum gravity scale may be farther than we expected. So I want to thank you for your attention, and that's all.
Questions?
Pietro, can you go back to page 19?
Yes.
Yeah. So all this is very, very interesting. And my question is, how can you make it stronger? For instance, you have these three disclaimers, these three assumptions. Do you have a reason to expect that this is a good approximation? For instance, the fact that the gauge fields are a billion, one may argue that in the UV, because of asymptotic freedom, this is a good approximation, this is a good truncation. But how difficult it is to go beyond this level?
I think it's quite difficult. So this is level zero approximation, see? Your first thing we can compute. We don't plan to extend it because considering the gauge fields to be non-abelian would be a nightmare from the point of view of the computation, and this is quite difficult. One thing that we want to try to explore is just by putting just one scalar field with self-interaction and try to mimic, for example, the Higgs Lagrangian in this way, and try to see if there are corrections to the Higgs mass due to the gravity contribution. But try to implement, for example, the whole standard model Lagrangian would be very, very difficult.
Thank
it's
you.
Just a computational difficulty. It's not a conceptual one.
I also have several questions in slide 19. So maybe we should just continue with what Eugenio was asking. First of all, as far as I know, quite some time ago, Percacci and Perini and various people had looked at the coupling of self-interacting scalar fields, and they did find that you get the a fixed point provided the coupling is, it's just lambda pi to the fourth, right?
Yes.
So first, I want to verify that. Am I right?
Yes, we want to verify that, but maybe I don't stress it too much because I thought that it was a little bit too technical to be interesting. But what we are doing here is something completely different from the conceptual point of view from what was done in the literature. In particular, we are including all the anomalous dimensions of all the fields, and this changed a lot the some feature of the theory. For example, just look at the no matter line, so just pure gravity. Also, in this case, we are including the graviton and gravitational gauss anomalous dimension. And if you're familiar with the usual picture people in asymptotic safety just show at the conferences or in the papers, you will see that the RG flow makes a spiral into the fixed point. This means that, for example, the critical exponents are imaginary, okay? But if you include the anomalous dimension, the other critical exponents become real. And this is the first time we see something, we see real critical exponents in this framework. So this is something new. And also, if you look at the cosmological constant for pure gravity, this is negative, okay? A little bit negative, not very much, but it's negative. And also this is a new thing for the asymptotic safety community.
Right. So I completely agree. Go ahead.
we want to do the same thing of the Patrachi Perini paper, see? But a priori, all the results can be different.
Oh, so that was my question. So you say that even the result which said that the fixed point does persist for lambda 5 to the 4th, but not for others, if like, that might even be different, or that might not survive.
Exactly.
Is that what you're saying?
Okay. Exactly.
Thank you. The second thing was that Eugenio just sort of very nicely sort of proposed that maybe it might be a nightmare to consider non-abelian gauge fields, but perhaps there is some argument one can make, which is just basically not a heroic calculation of the kind that you have already done, but some semi-quantitative argument, which would say that because of asymptotic safety, because of asymptotic freedom in ordinary gauge theories, this assumption that the gauge fields are abelian is not that bad. Some calculation, sort of just not full-blown one, but just around the fixed point or something, which says that, well, assume there is asymptotic freedom, or estimate the corrections and show that they are small or something like that. Is that something that is feasible?
Yes, I think so, but you have to pay attention to I wouldn't bet that things are still the same, because putting non-abelian fields will change completely, for example, the anomalous dimension for the gauge field. So it will have no effect to the computation of the beta function, for example, or the anomalous dimension for the graviton, that will change completely the computation for the anomalous dimension of the abelian field. That a priori is a next leading order correction. So, yeah, in some sense, you can just say that considering them abelian are a good approximation, but it's still just an approximation.
So the last question is really the point that you already explained, but many of us did not completely grasp it. And this was a new point, new criterion that you have just introduced, right? With respect to the anomalous dimension, with respect to this predictivity, right?
Yes.
Can you explain that again? And also this then remark that because the anomalous dimension is so large for the graviton, minus 34.19, therefore predictivity needs to be examined carefully. Can you comment more on that?
Yes. So this is more of a proposal of our proposal of a new criteria. So it is not a physically motivated criteria. So what we are saying is that we want a finite number of attractive direction at the fixed point. To do that, we just require that there are a finite number of critical exponents at the fixed point. And if you consider, for example, an infinite number of operators that are powers of the graviton field, okay, you have to impose that the anomalous dimension has to be greater than some numbers, because the anomalous dimension of the field is a part of the leading order of the critical exponent of the fixed point. So let's explain a little bit better. So I'm missing
some part of the question. If you have almost 35, the anomalous dimension is almost 35, then that would mean that, or minus 35, that would mean that the dimensionality of this relevant surface is very high. That's what you're saying, is that right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, and
therefore predictivity in that sense is lower because
you need
many.
Yes, you have a model with a lot of parameters that need to be fixed to be predictive.
Thank you.
Is there any other question? If not, let's thank the speaker again.